public-mindedness. Try this mental exercise on some of the things you do. Take a situation, routine, or event in your life. Think about how you act in it and try to relate them to values you have. You might find some values you weren't completely aware of. Come up with as many examples as you can. Eventually, a few core values will keep popping up more than others, and those are probably the ones you really believe in. Here's one important thing to remember. When you're doing this exercise and the event you're analyzing involves your relationship with someone else, make sure you focus on your values and what makes you comfortable or uneasy. Don't consider what the other person might value or frame your values in the context of the relationship. You need to be temporarily selfish in this exercise because you're trying to figure out what you want. You have permission to be self-centered in this procedure. Once you get a firmer idea of what you stand for, it'll help you become more resolute and curb your tendency to people-please. Change yourself and only yourself. While reaffirming your values and getting ready to set boundaries, you might think to yourself, "This situation would be better if my friends, partners, parents, children, co-workers would accept my way of thinking. If everybody could see it my way, there would be no problem at all." It's human to want that. When we come across a solution, we want to tell everybody about how we fixed ourselves. "I was messed up. I'm not messed up anymore. You're still messed up. You need to do exactly what I did." Or maybe we just want people to stop being so hard to deal with. We want our partners to stop being so lazy around the house. We want our bosses to stop belittling us. We want our friends to quit being melodramatic. That's human too. But go back to what we talked about at the end of the last chapter, about breaking habits. Assume and assert your own self-responsibility, things that are completely under your control. We're not responsible for changing the behaviors of others. Not only that, but trying to change other people almost never works. What you can and should change is how you deal with other people. You're not going to stop people from attempting to violate your boundaries, but you can change how you deal with these attempts. This doesn't mean bending over backward to accommodate them, a people-pleaser move. This means changing your personal approach based on the core values we've just discovered and acting in a way that communicates boundaries. It means communicating in a different way with people you're having issues with. It also means standing your emotional ground with people who are being overly aggressive with your personal space. Let's say someone you're close with is a compulsive overspender. They're always buying things they don't need. They occasionally ask for loans but always seem to have a lot of stuff or go on vacations more than a broke person should. You know if this person would just adopt more stringent budget practices, they'd change their ways. If only they'd pay closer attention to their bank balance, or get better at planning their financial future just like you have. In fact, you're going to march over to this person's apartment with a copy of Budgeting for Dummies, and you're going to tell them their lifestyle is a highway to financial insolvency and bankruptcy. Right? Well, no. You're not responsible for this person's problems. You do not have the time to spend fixing them. You have your own things to deal with. But what you can do is not give them money anymore. You can only change your behavior to not enable or support other people's behaviors. You are only a part of someone else's mental calculus. Altering how you deal with others is a much more rewarding exercise than trying to convert people to your way of thinking. Anytime you can work on your own initiative and do something transformative for yourself, it'll be much more effective and fruitful for your own health. Set the consequences. So, what happens after somebody's ignored your limits and happily trespassed on your personal space after you've told them to respect your boundaries? The answer? Whatever you want. Within reason, that is. You're not entitled to start a street fight or hack their computer. But you are entitled to stand your emotional ground and defend your personal space. To do that, you have to decide what the consequence will be when someone goes past your boundaries. The only thing you're not allowed to do is nothing. For example, let's say that someone's on Facebook who's continually hounding you about a dispute they're having. You've offered warnings to him about pestering you in a public forum, but he keeps doing it. So you decide upon the consequence of unfriending or blocking him from your feed. This can be a big, hard step for you emotionally. It's an anxious moment, but it's part of setting your boundaries. This is your needs and yours alone. These are the needs you have to respect. If someone's crossing that threshold continually despite your admonitions for them to stop, you have to lay down the law for yourself. You can expect them to react unfavorably, of course. They might call you judgmental, short-sighted, unfair, rash, or irrational. Count on them being that way. Simply consider it part of the process of setting the consequence. But don't let it change your decision. Another great step to take when setting consequences is writing them down ahead of time. I recommend writing things down for pretty much any situation, but it's especially good to do here. Write down the boundaries you have, the actions others might take that trespass those boundaries, and exactly what you will do when they violated your boundaries. Writing is good for organizing your thoughts and to remind you what you've decided if you need to in the future. It's often difficult to make sound decisions when we're emotional or fearful, so knowing what we've previously decided with a clear mind can help us act. People pleasers fear others' disfavor to the point that they allow offenses against them to go unaddressed. Having a firm policy about the consequences of going over your limits help you develop more resolve and self-respect. More steps to setting boundaries. Nobody else knows what your inner priorities are. Nobody else can tell you how to set up your boundaries. It may sound like a difficult job, but the upshot is that you'll be more prepared to take initiative about reinforcing your values. For anyone trying to get out of a life of people-pleasing, those are critical skills. Here are more helpful processes on the boundary-setting process. Get clear and specific on what your boundaries are. You're the one who decides what will work for you and what won't. When you're setting up and explaining your boundaries, you have to be as explicit and direct as you can about them. It's impossible to get someone to respect your boundaries if you're not clear on them yourself. For example, if you don't know that you resent people eating at your dining room table and leaving a mess behind, how will they? When you're establishing these boundaries, think in general terms. Use your core value system to define what you want in more specific areas. Accept that you have a lot of areas to consider when you're setting your personal policies, personal space, personal info, money and possessions, your time and schedule, use of your personal car, that's always a big one, and so forth. You're allowed to make different boundaries for different people in your life. Not everybody has to follow the same slate of rules and regulations. They can vary according to how close certain people might be to you. It's one thing when a family member or close friend asks if they can borrow your car, but it's quite another when a casual buddy from work or the bar does so. If you feel you need to adjust the boundaries for some and not for others, that's your call. Finally, people might not understand why you've set up certain limitations, rules, or boundaries. That's completely okay. They don't have to. They're your decisions. If other people don't understand that or feel that your rules go against their personal emotions or values, it matters not one bit. Don't worry about them. Communicate your boundaries to others in very exact terms. Make sure everybody's very, very clear on what your limits are, especially if they're different for various people. You have an obligation to be clear, candid, and forthright with others about what your boundaries are. You can't assume they'll just guess correctly. For example, people keep crashing on your sofa. Every weekend, someone you know stays out late and doesn't want to drive back to their home for whatever reason. So they knock on your door, ask if they can crash. You back down, and 15 minutes later, your sofa's closed for the night. and there's also a fair chance they'll sneak something from your fridge while you're asleep. It takes personal space away and probably eats a little bit of your time as well. You probably haven't made it expressly clear that this arrangement no longer works for you. You haven't set this boundary clearly, preferring to passively aggressively hint that you're annoyed and prefer not to have this happen. So, they'll keep doing it because they don't know you have a problem with it. Until you state without equivocation what your boundaries are, folks are going to keep traipsing right through them. Some people will get it if you drop a slight hint. For example, take the story about Alexa and Daniel, the guy who asked too many personal questions. Alexa may have expressed her boundaries by simply responding, "Why do you have to ask?" Many people will pick up on that clue and back off, leaving your boundaries intact. Others aren't quite as intuitive, and if they keep on not taking the hint, then it's time for you to be explicit and direct with them. This is the tough part. Alexa could have said something like, "I don't like to discuss that," "I'm not going to do that," or, "Please stop harping on me about this topic." That super magic word, "no," is a direct way to defend your boundaries. Similarly, to defend your couch, you can offer, "This isn't going to work for me anymore," or, "This is the last time you'll be able to do this without X," or, "This isn't going to happen again." If someone doesn't understand your set of boundaries and questions why you have them in place, you are not required to answer them. You don't owe any explanation. You don't have to describe your reasoning or what caused you to make that decision. You don't have to justify a thing. You know yourself. You know what's important to you. You know why you feel the way you do. That is all you need to be concerned about. You don't have to draw a diagram for anybody else. Remember, when communicating your boundaries, no is a complete sentence. Don't let boundary crossers off the hook. You've figured out your boundaries. You've clearly explained them to others. You've defined what the consequences will be. And yet, someone's still going past your limits. What now? You have to lay down your personal law and not let the violators off easy. It's time to act. Implementing your personal boundaries is absolutely necessary when you're trying to establish your limits and assert yourself. That's why you should only set rules that you are willing to carry out. Any regulation you set that you're only going to enforce halfway is probably one you should reconsider. You either don't really feel the limit is necessary, or you haven't quite worked out all the details. People will take notice and take it as a sign that you aren't very serious about your boundaries. They might as well not exist at that point. This is what is known as a blurry boundary, and it's a sign of weakness that people will immediately exploit. Some folks will resent your setting down limits and dishing out consequences. We'll go a little more into detail about how to contend with more negative outcomes in just a little bit. But for now, know that it will happen. For example, it would have been easy to simply try and not let your Facebook bully friend bug you. You could have ignored him or found other ways to deal with him. But you know if you allow him to continue to have that access to you, he's only going to keep doing what he does. You've explained yourself. You've defined your limits. And he's ignoring them. Hit that unfriend button and don't look back. The people pleaser has a hard time thinking about what's right for them, let alone standing up for themselves by carrying through on consequences. You'll find that if you back up your boundaries with solid action, there'll only be a small bit of anxiety in the action itself, far less than there would be if you keep letting it fester. The three levels of personal boundaries. You now know how to define your personal boundaries, explain them, and enforce them. And you also know that boundary rules can be different according to who you're dealing with. Now, let's discuss what actually happens when people cross over into your personal space, whether they're invited or not. When you're involved in an interaction with someone, There are basically three levels that depict how deeply you're protecting your boundaries. Simply put, there's too strong, too weak, and just right. Healthy. The goal is to maintain your boundaries in a balanced manner. A healthy boundary will reinforce your character, moderate your emotional reactions, and help you be generous in a meaningful way. When you have healthy boundaries, you have a healthy respect for yourself, your feelings, and your viewpoint. You don't sell out your core values so that others can take advantage of them. You exchange and reveal personal information in a subtle and proper way. You're also able to handle it when people say no to you. Rigid. You can also be extra firm when setting your boundaries and turn yourself into an impenetrable fortress. But there are serious drawbacks to this approach. You're likely to have few, if any, intimate or close relationships with anyone. You'll appear distant and removed to other people, possibly completely isolated. You'll be reticent to ask anyone else for assistance, and you'll keep yourself away from vulnerable situations so you don't have to deal with rejection. The rigid boundary setter does everything possible to avoid being exposed, weak, or too available because they don't want to get hurt by anybody else. But in doing so, they still get hurt by themselves. Porous. Someone with very thin boundaries tends to let a lot of people and forces into their life to basically act out their will. When you keep porous boundaries, you tend to give out too much personal information or get far too involved in the problems of other people. No is a word you have an extremely difficult time saying. You open yourself up to discourteous and abusive people. In fact, you practically invite and permit people to take advantage of your goodwill. The porous boundary setter is far too trusting and unreserved about other people. They get exploited on a regular basis, even by people with no intentions to exploit them. They're often disappointed and can become bitter about their existence, even as they still overshare themselves. This is another way of describing blurry boundaries. Looking over this information, you're probably inclined to believe that the healthy level is the one you should shoot for 100% of the time. That's not a terrible place to start, but you will find that you might need to adjust in either direction depending on certain factors. For example, if you have a good relationship with your family, most likely you'll be a little more porous to them. If you're in a working relationship with someone you mistrust, you probably nudge yourself toward the rigid policy. You have the freedom to decide how far you'll bend or expand your boundaries in a given situation. But there are very few, if any, situations where it's a good idea to be full-on rigid or porous. Thick-bordered people are hard to reach, are very defensive, and practically walk around in full body armor. Thin-bordered ones are overly open and frequently naive. They're easy to get close to, but their naked sincerity can let in bad forces. Also, consider that different world cultures have differing standards of emotional display and behaviors. Some cultures are very open and demonstrative with affections. Others are more reserved and professional. This can make world travel hilarious. The main thing to consider when you're setting your boundaries, as I've said several times, is that you're the one in charge. You have to trust in yourself and believe what you need, want, and cherish is right. And you have to know that your feelings are equally as important as anyone else's. Setting boundaries in the middle of a situation. It's always great to have everything planned out in advance, but situations come up in which you'll find your boundaries being penetrated, and you'll have to make situational, on-the-fly adjustments to keep yourself intact and healthy. Circumstances happen that you're not instinctively prepared for, and when they do, you'll need to react in a way that keeps your boundaries in place. Your response should always send a clear message. But if you're trying to get over your people-pleasing habit, it may be easier to be subtle and strong. After all, you're used to appeasing everyone, so turning that mode off and being tough and decisive might not be possible. For demonstration purposes, here are a few topics and emotions that may arise suddenly in an unforeseen situation. I'll give you two possible responses for each, one that's subtle and considerate, in the hopes that hints will be picked up, and another that's more direct and to the point after it becomes clear that force is needed. Of course, the phrasing here can be applied to many circumstances. Money. Everyone needs to be paid, but there might be a couple of friends or associates who keep needing assistance. You can't be fully expected to keep giving out money you've earned or is rightfully yours to someone who can't respect your limits. Subtle. I'm sorry about the situation you're in. I just have limited resources right now and don't have the room to lend money at the moment. Direct. I can't keep lending you money. I have to use it for my own needs and upkeep. You need to find a way to take care of yourself and get the money on your own. Extra commitments. Often we find ourselves giving too much of our time away, and it's especially troublesome when we're maxing out our energies in efforts we genuinely care about. But instead of overpromising on something, defend and guard the time you need to pay attention to other aspects of your life. Subtle. I'm very sympathetic to your cause, but although I care about it myself, I'm afraid my bandwidth is maxed out. I'd be happy to talk about it once I get more time. Direct. I can't help right now. I just don't have the time. Unconstructive criticism. Judgment, character assassination, and harsh jokes about your appearance or manner are almost never okay, but they can be tricky to defend after you've been shocked or hurt. But it's vital to stand up for yourself as soon as you can. Subtle. I realize you may have been making a joke or weren't being serious, but I felt hurt at the comments you made. It's a sensitive issue with me. I hope you understand. Direct. I don't appreciate your remarks. I'm not going to be part of this conversation if you keep on making them. Anger. Disagreements happen, but when emotions get out of hand, it's unfortunately easy for someone to break protocol and become hostile and abusive. It's important to be calm, but strong about taking down the temperature. Subtle. I need you to try and be less angry. You're making it difficult to communicate. The only way we're going to fix this situation is by being reasonable. Could you try to use a more measured tone? Direct. Don't scream at me. Would you tolerate it yourself? I'm leaving the room. When you've calmed yourself down and won't threaten me, we might be able to resume this discussion. Buying time. There might be a time when someone says they urgently need you to make an instant decision and do something immediately. As the business cliche goes, their emergency is not your priority. Stand firm on your schedule. Subtle. I understand what you're saying. I just need some time to think about what the best way would be to go forward. I realize you feel this is urgent, but can I get back to you on this? That would be helpful. Direct. I'm not going to force myself to make a quick decision without giving it more thought. I need time to consider it further. If you can't wait another minute for my answer, then the answer is no. Knowing how to adjust and react in the middle of an unexpected boundary crossing incident makes it easier to resist sudden urges to people please. Prepare for the aftermath. Now for the fun part. When you finally take the personal initiative to respect yourself and set and defend your boundaries, it may bend a few people out of shape. They won't be happy. They'll be upset and maybe sad. A few of them might be really pissed off. But staying firm to your boundaries will actually help your relationships and alliances over the long haul. If someone else's responses makes you let down your boundaries, you're going to feel irritated with them as time goes on. You can't let yourself be deterred by them. You need a situation where your friends, relations, and associates truly esteem you for who you are and will respect your limits, even if they feel a little let down or unhappy with your decision at first. Like any good business plan, you have to account for a certain measure of risk to make your boundary settings more likely to succeed. In this case, you have to allow for, in fact, fully anticipate, that someone might be angry when you set your boundaries. You therefore need to steel your resolve with someone who might be unreasonably mad with you. You can't accept their bullying or their attempts to break your limits. You can't let them continue to exploit your sympathy or helpfulness or show disdain for the boundaries that are completely your right to establish. If you allow an angry person to weaken your determination because they scare you, your situation will not improve. Realize this as quickly as you can. By withdrawing your request that they respect your limits, you'll only get more depressed and displeased. In time, that turns into full-on acrimony and hatred. On the other hand, if you stand firm in the face of someone's indignation with you, the discomfort will only be temporary. They may continue to feel resentful for a bit, but you'll at least know that you've stood your ground and defended what's important to you. And at least you will eventually feel confident that you've made the right choice. Chances are their anger will die down as well, and you'll still have a relationship you can build back up again. Whatever's making them so angry isn't your problem, it's theirs. Once again, you're responsible for your own actions and deeds. They are responsible for their own reactions. If you sustain an even temperament and hold firm to your convictions about boundaries, maybe they'll finally learn they need to respect others more often. Don't take an angry person's bait. If their rage is starting to careen out of control, keep yourself calm. Don't let them dictate the hostile tone of the exchange just because they're infuriated. This is one of those rare situations where remaining idle is a sign of strength. Let them storm their head off and quietly go about your business. Another thing people pleasers often do in the presence of an angry person is to immediately try to make them feel better and get back into their good graces. They frequently do this without thinking, but you should resist the urge to make it all better as well, because you'll still be ceding your personal power to someone who's just going to consume it. When dealing with the fire and fury of someone who's angry with your decisions, including those in which you've established your boundaries, the solution is marvelously simple. Do nothing. It's not always easy, but it's almost always the best way. To get out of people-pleasing mode, one needs to understand the importance of forming boundaries. Determine what their personal ones are, keep guard over them, and aggressively defend them when they're being transgressed. Harnessing that strength of character will remind you of your value and beliefs, and will take you out of the subservient position of trying to satisfy everyone. Takeaways. Strong and clear boundaries will be one of your best defenses against people-pleasing and the people that would have you do so. However, they can't exist solely in your head, and they can't be so flexible that people see no reason to abide by them. Thus, you must communicate them clearly and enforce them without exception. First, you need to define your boundaries by exploring what your core and surface values are. This is how you know what you should protect and what you can let go of. Communicate them to others. The other major aspect is setting consequences and then enforcing them. This is what happens when someone attempts to violate your boundaries after you've communicated them. This can be whatever you want. The only thing it cannot be is nothing. Failure to do so will create porous boundaries, which are as good as no boundaries at all. However, they also cannot be too rigid. Unfortunately, you will almost always have some sort of negative reaction to your boundaries. This is something you have to prepare for, but it will be difficult nonetheless. People don't like getting told no, but that reflects on them, not you as a person. Chapter 6. How to Say No. Learning to say no can be the ultimate assertive skill a person can possess. Most of us aim to please, and as we've learned throughout this book, it's not necessarily our fault. It may not even be a conscious decision to be unable to say no. Somewhere in our lives, we've discovered that we bring negativity and possible confrontation or disappointment into an interaction, or we don't set proper and rigid boundaries, or any of the multitude of reasons we've talked about related to a lack of assertiveness in this book. The end result of saying yes when you want to say no is the same no matter what. And that's what this chapter aims to address. You already know what you need to do, and you might even understand your physical holdups. That doesn't magically make saying no easy and remove the inherent tension. In fact, you'll probably never get 100% accustomed to the tension. But at the very least, you can learn specific phrases and tactics to say no that will help you communicate your message more gracefully and smoothly. I can't versus I don't. You might be surprised to know that how we talk to ourselves can impact our ability to say no. The Journal of Consumer Research published a study in which 120 students were divided into two groups, the I can't group and the I don't group. One group was told that each time they were faced with temptation, they were to tell themselves, I can't do X. For example, when tempted with chocolate, they were to say, I can't eat chocolate. The other group, the I don't group, was instructed to say, I don't do X, or in the case of chocolate, I don't eat chocolate. The result of this study showed the major impact that just a slight difference in vocabulary can make on our ability to say no, to resist temptation, and to motivate goal-directed behavior. The I don't group was overwhelmingly more successful in its ability to say no. If you tell yourself, I can't, you're simply reminding yourself of the limitations you've set for yourself. You're creating a feedback loop in your brain that tells you you can't do something that you would normally want to do. I can't becomes an exercise in self-discipline, which is not something you want to constantly depend on. On the other hand, when you tell yourself, I don't, you're creating a feedback loop that reminds you of your power and control of the situation. You've given yourself a line in the sand that takes the situation out of your hands. Your choice was pre-made to say no, and thus you can stick to it more easily. By simply changing one word when we talk to ourselves, we can change our behavior. When people hear don't, it's more of a hard boundary, whereas can't typically implies an open-ended answer that encourages people to try to persuade and coax you. For example, consider a situation in which someone on a diet is offered a calorie-loaded dessert. If they say, I can't, they are reminding themselves of the limitations created by their diet. They have thought about it and made an active decision to say no. If they instead say, I don't, when offered the same dessert, they'll be taking control of the situation and only have to stick to their pre-made decision. They'll be reminding themselves that they don't eat foods that are full of calories. The I don't mantra can be an invaluable tool in our daily lives. In saying, I don't let my friends talk me into things I don't want to do, or I don't eat between meals, we make it a lot easier to say no or resist temptation. We also empower ourselves and make it much easier to achieve our goals and objectives. We are talking both to ourselves and the requesters. You've got a policy and you're sticking to it. Rejecting categories. In learning to say no, the same I don't principle applies to someone who gets repeated requests for favors or obligations. Instead of reviewing each request separately, you might consider rejecting the entire category. In other words, instead of reviewing each request and making an I can or an I can't decision, you'll find that it's much more empowering to reject all requests that are in a certain category, such as, sorry, I don't do these types of meetings anymore. This approach will take all the decision-making out of the requests from other people, and you'll find it much easier to say no to these requests. Yes, you can make exceptions to requests when it's something you really want to do or really need to do. But you'll find that it's much easier to opt into a request than it is to opt out. Just like with saying I don't as opposed to I can't, refusing an entire category is a boundary that most people will accept. If they sense you make exceptions frequently, they will attempt to persuade you to let them be yet another one. As an example, our old friend Jack is a well-known author whose crime novels have sold hundreds of thousands of copies. As a result, he gets numerous requests from groups who invite him to attend their meetings and discuss these books. Inundated with requests from groups as small as 5 or 6 people and as large as 200 people, Jack has established his own criteria for speaking to groups about his books. He won't speak to any group of less than 20, and he won't make any group presentations in the months of May through August, as those are the months he wants to use to write his next book, and those are also months where his kids are out of school, and he wants to make sure he spends time with them then. In forming his own restrictive criteria to filter guest speaking requests, Jack finds it much easier to say no to many of the numerous requests he receives. He already knows what his rules are, and it's easier to abide to a blanket rule than decide who deserves to be an exception. Once again, if it's difficult for you to say no, you should resolve to start rejecting categories. Resolve to say no whenever someone asks you for a favor. Automatically reject the request categorically. Then, if it is something you really want to do, you can always opt in and say yes, but no should be your preferred response. If you have people in your life that make repeated requests, it might be better to preempt the request. I know you're moving at the end of the month. I'll have to take a rain check this time around. My wife and I have agreed that we should make an effort to spend more time with the kids. The relational account. The problem with no is that it's negative. Well, I suppose that's obvious, isn't it? Despite its power when used correctly, no isn't an easy thing for people to say, especially for someone caught up in people-pleasing. No matter your reasons for saying no, the other party will probably experience it as a rejection. Saying no directly, even if you're polite and your reasons are legitimate, can affect how others perceive you. They might think you're frigid, standoffish, or ungenerous. Whether any of those characteristics are fair or not, they demonstrate how much power the word no wields. How do we stand our ground when there's far too much on our plate to take care of new requests? Wharton professor and writer Adam Grant came upon the idea of relational account, or as he puts it, if I help you, I'd be letting others down. The relational account simply involves making mention of your responsibilities and obligations to another person when you turn the asker down. For example, if a friend asks you to house-sit their home for an extended period of time they'll be away, you could say, I just have too many responsibilities right now. My partner and I are remodeling our home so it'll be easier for our kids. I'm needed on that front right now. You need someone who's going to be able to give it full attention. If someone is asking you to cover them at work, you could say, I'm very involved in a project that's keeping me from taking part in a lot of things I'm interested in, unfortunately. I just don't have the capacity for all the things I'd like to do. The relational account method works because it infers that you're actually a positive, caring person. The reason you can't help out is because you're overbooked or that there's someone else depending on you. This reduces the requester's feeling of rejection and takes away the chance that you'll be stigmatized as a crank or a grouch just because you said no. This is especially handy for the recovering people pleaser, as it helps maintain whatever positive reputation they might have. You won't go from a feckless helper to a sharp denier overnight. Yes, what should I deprioritize? In situations where you've got too much on your plate, someone might make a request that would crowd your schedule even more. If agreeing to their request is going to imperil your productivity, you absolutely have to deny them in some way, whether in work, in public, or at home. But it can be very hard to say no, especially to people with authority, like a boss, or those we have strong feelings for and we don't want to let down. For these situations, another way of saying no is by saying yes, with a catch. Agree to do what they ask of you, but also ask them which of your many other responsibilities should you cease working on to make room for their request. The deprioritizing angle is especially good for work situations, in which you're answering to someone higher up than you. Sure, I'd be happy to help you go through our budget for next year. What other job can I put aside for now so I can focus on that? Should I put the marketing presentation or the archive project on the back burner for now? But it's effective in personal situations as well. I'd be happy to help you move this weekend, but I'd have to cancel either my visit with my mom or my kids' ballet recital. What would you do? I can help you with painting the living room. Should I deprioritize cleaning up the garage or working on the vegetable garden? This approach works for many reasons. Your yes response sends a positive message and suggests a spirit of willingness. In asking your requester to pick what item to pass over for now, you're giving the asker the appearance of having an option, when in actuality, it's you that's making the choice. Perhaps most importantly, it's a subtle way to say, I've got too much on my plate right now. It draws attention that they have asked for too much and that you're not intending to satisfy their every whim. You're also establishing yourself as a methodical schedule setter because you have way too much going on, but you keep it organized and under control. Finally, you're setting a boundary for yourself in the politest way possible, especially if you're trying to break out of people-pleasing mode. Those are critical steps to take. Plant seeds by preemptively saying no. I'm sure you know a couple of people who nurse a constant habit of asking for things. You can almost sense their need the minute they walk into the room. You know at some point, probably several, they're going to make a request of you that you'll have to deny. In those cases, there's a very subtle trick that you can use to refuse them. The reason it's tricky is because you use it in a situation where they're not asking you for anything. It's something you do in a normal conversation or meeting. When you're talking with the person you know is going to hit you up at some point, talk about everything going on in your life that will require you to say no to someone in the near or even distant future. This is just like the relational account, except you're using it before you get asked to do anything. Talk about how busy you are and all the things you do. Explain how you're strapped for resources like money or manpower. Tell them all the reasons you have to say no to other people in your life at the moment besides them. For example, if you're with a friend who you think might ask you to crash at your house for an extended period of time, you can say, "My house is getting really cramped. There's no room for me to have any personal space, it seems. I'm always crowded out. It's so jam-packed in there, I can't even have people over for a visit." If you're anticipating that someone at work will ask you to take on new responsibilities, especially if you know your company's reorganizing in advance, you can say, "I can't believe how busy I've been lately. There are so many things I have to account for, I'm still working them into my daily schedule. I don't know how I'll keep up with them all." This works because it establishes your grounds for saying no for the foreseeable future. You've produced the perception that you have a very full life and schedule that doesn't leave you a lot of room to take on or do something new. And when the serial asker does make their request, you can remind them that you've already mentioned why you have to say no. "Like I told you the other day, I've got a million things on my plate right now." The ultimate goal in the preemptive denial is, of course, that people will stop requesting things from you. They'll know ahead of time you're probably not going to be able to help them. This is an ex-people-pleaser's dream scenario. You could become so skillful at saying no in these situations that you'll be able to issue a preemptive denial way before the asker even knows they're going to ask. That guy who you think is going to ask you to join his expensive fantasy football league? You can just say something like, "I'm so broke. I'm going to have to work so much that I don't think I'm going to be following football this year." Keep it simple. The best way to say no is to be simple and straightforward. There are no tricks around how to do it. It's just the inherent discomfort and tension of the act. If you've been passive for a long time, people are going to be surprised when you say no. And if you're dealing with someone who has an alpha personality, they will almost surely try to get you to change your decision. Heck, your lack of assertiveness might be why they hang around you in the first place. And it's tough to change that relationship dynamic once it's been set. Expect pushback and shock when you change the dynamic. The worst thing you can do in such a predicament is revise your decision. If you do, Know that you'll have to face the same predicament with the same person whenever they have future requests. And they'll know that your no is negotiable. Become a broken record. Each time they ask, answer with a quick and simple no, leaving no room for negotiation. If you appear to have wiggle room, you'll just be encouraging people to continue to persuade you. Resist the moment. The toughest time in saying no usually occurs right after you do so. It's then when you want to offer help, keep talking, or do anything to reduce the tension that your no has created. This is usually the time when you start wavering. Well, if you really need my help, I guess I could. I'd rather not, but... Resist the temptation and stay silent, because your assertiveness is often lost in that moment. When saying no, remember that you don't need to make excuses. You can say you're busy, it's not in your wheelhouse, or whatever your reason is, but that's it. Leave it at that. If you still feel the need to add a because at the end of your sentence, keep it short and simple and don't elaborate on the details. The more details you give, the more fodder you give people to pick at. For instance, if you say no to helping your friend move because you need to walk your cat in the morning, you create an avenue for people to dispute that you need to walk your cat at all. Don't hem and haw your way through a lame explanation on why you said no. Don't feel compelled to share an alternative or something that can make up for your no. It's okay to just say no. No further explanation is needed. Overall, remember that no can be a complete sentence. Create hoops. If you can't just say no, or if you can't say no immediately, another option is to defer the decision or punt it to the future. Tell them you'll think about it and, if applicable, ask them to do something to prepare you for it. In other words, put the burden back on them by requesting something to help you consider their request. Confused? Let's take Jonathan, who is very smart and mentors companies. He is asked for coffee all the time from people who would like to pick his brain and otherwise soak up information from him like a sponge. As you can imagine, he doesn't have time for everyone that asks him. He has to say no quite frequently, but he's devised a way around it. He creates a hoop for them to jump through before he agrees to anything further. When someone asks him for coffee, he will ask them to send, via email, an agenda or plan of what they want to discuss and why. He doesn't hear from 99% of the people again. As you can see from Jonathan's case, it becomes very clear who just wants to use you for something without being willing to contribute in any way or make it easy for you. When someone asks you for something, create a condition for them to fulfill in order for you to consider their request. It will buy you time and space, and most people will never get back to you because they will have to put in the work. Another related way to say no is something to the effect of, "I'm not sure right now, but can you follow up with me?" It has the same effect of shifting the burden onto someone else, and we already know, of course, that the best case scenario from shifting the burden onto someone else is that they just leave you alone out of laziness or they forget. You can also use the variety of, "I can't right now, but maybe when my circumstances change." Bait and switch. Another option, if you're having a tough time saying no, will be to offer a bait and switch yes. "I can't do that, but I can do this." "I can't spend all day helping you move to another apartment, but I can give you 2 hours. "I can't go out with you this weekend, but I promise that I'll make some time to do that within the next month." "I can't serve on the board, but I'll be willing to consult on an ad hoc basis whenever I have time." What you're doing here is saying no to the request and offering a smaller consolation prize that may or may not be refused. It may be a legitimate alternative as something you are willing to do, but it doesn't have to be. Your no is disguised because you appear to be still open and willing, at least on the surface. If you offer something relatively small, people will likely refuse and tell you not to bother with it. Even better is if you don't provide specific detail and leave it as open-ended as possible. In most cases, the bait and switch will result in freedom from an ask or obligation. This tactic alleviates most of the tension because you are saying yes to something, just not what is specifically being asked. Keep it non-personal. Many times when we say no, it feels terrible because we know how we'd feel when we get rejected. We might take it personally and ruminate on how much someone doesn't care about us, or perhaps how the symbolic value is lacking. Therefore, it is important to keep your no as non-personal as possible and as focused on the specific situation at hand as possible. In essence, you are rejecting the person because of the situation and circumstances, not because of the person themselves. Some people have difficulty separating the two, but the former is much, much easier to both speaker and hearer. For instance, you were invited to a friend's birthday party only to learn that your ex, with whom you had a particularly nasty split, will be there. Your friend is giving you grief about passing it up, but in reality, it's not about your friend. It's about the situation and being in an enclosed area with someone who makes you nauseous. In this case, you would emphasize that you aren't saying no to spending time with your friend, which is what they might perceive, but instead saying no to being in your ex's presence. A little bit of regret always helps. For instance, "I'd really love to, and I was really looking forward to hanging out with you, but I can't." When people feel validated and not rejected, they'll accept a no far more easily. Just be sure to focus on the specific circumstances and how they won't work for you. Pass the buck. Here, you aren't saying no as much as, "Yes, but..." Allow me to explain. Passing the buck means passing the responsibility onto someone else who is not you. It's when you suggest that someone else would be a much better, more qualified fit than you, and thus, you should bow out. You wouldn't do the requester justice, but you can still help them solve their problem by finding someone who will. The requester won't necessarily hear a no, which is the most important part. For instance, if you're asking someone to drive you to the airport, you might say, "No, I'm a terrible driver and driving on the highway makes me feel anxious. But Ted is a great driver and might be free that day." You've successfully passed the buck to Ted by making yourself pale in comparison to how Ted might solve the issue. People ask you for things because they want to solve a problem they have. If you make yourself seem like a terrible solution, but at the same time can point them in the direction of a real solution, you've avoided a duty. Saying no is a valuable skill. In learning to say no, you'll be able to take control of your life and your time. Learning to say no, you'll empower yourself to avoid the things you don't want to do. In learning to say no properly, you'll be able to avoid tension, confrontation, and ruffled feathers. A life devoid of no is one that is not your own. It is one that is lived for other people. Like any skill, the ability to say no is often an acquired talent. You too can learn how to say no. It may take some time and some practice, but when you become proficient at saying no, you'll wonder what to do with all the free time you now possess. As I mentioned before, you're going to face at least a little repercussion for standing your ground. That's going to happen when you start saying no as well, even if you use some of the more creative ways we've talked about in this chapter. The people you used to automatically please might be unreasonably offended because they no longer have regular access to you. They've become accustomed to just expecting things from you, and you're doing them without protest. That's not the case anymore because you've altered that relationship, so you can expect some initial blowback. But in time, just like when you set your boundaries, that anger will recede and hopefully evolve into respect. You'll be seen as someone who is responsible, organized, and deliberate, not just an overwilling people pleaser. Takeaways. Saying no is one of the toughest situations in everyday life because it is a mini confrontation every single time. But there are many ways to make this part of life smoother and less tense. Start saying, "I don't," versus "I can't," because the former implies a policy, whereas the latter implies something to be negotiated. Likewise, get into the habit of saying no to specific and broad categories, because that also implies a policy that you don't make exceptions for. There are countless ways to say no. You already know a few, including the simplest way, no as a complete sentence. Understand that people will react strongly to you if you have a history of people-pleasing and being a doormat. Other methods of saying no include planting preemptive seeds, emphasizing how you are tied to other people and can't act independently, referencing the fact that you can't do everything at once, resisting the moment where you want to insert an addendum or caveat, creating hoops for people to jump through and themselves say yes to, baiting and switching with related or unrelated tasks, keeping it non-personal and focused on the specific circumstances, and passing the buck to someone who appears to be able to solve the problem at hand much better than you. This has been Stop People Pleasing. Be assertive, stop caring what others think, beat your guilt, and stop being a pushover. Written by Patrick King. Narrated by Steve Campbell. Copyright 2018 by Patrick King. Production copyright by Patrick King.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.